Hey y'all, I'm Sammy, your host of the You Are Made for More podcast. John 10:10 is a promise that Jesus came down to earth so that we would have life and have it abundantly. My prayer is that this podcast and all of the content that we put out will remind every student that they were made for more simply because of who they were created to be. My own walk with the Lord and my relationships with the teenagers that I disciple have shown me that once we understand whose we are, the game changes, or in other words, transformation happens. Our identity changes everything. We recognize that it takes investment and partnership between the church and parents to raise teens who know and believe who they are in Jesus, and we're here to help with that. So buckle up as we take this journey and take a look at what God has to say about friendships, relationships, sexuality, dating, and all the things in between. Hey friends, I am so excited to introduce to you today's guest. Her name is Christy Cassell, and I just wanted to jump on here and preface this episode for you, telling you that you may recognize Christy's name if you follow our blog at youweremadeformore.org. She did write a blog for us that's entitled Pornography, It's Not Just a Guy Problem. I will link that in the show notes for you so you can give that a read. It is for real so good, but this podcast is an extension on that conversation, and it seriously might be better than what she already has written. So I really am excited for you guys to hear what she has to say. Christy is a youth director at a church in El Paso, Texas. She's also a wife, and she is someone who has gained freedom from an addiction to pornography. I love how she boldly shares her story and how she's learning how to talk to students about her own sin and her struggles in an effort to allow them to gain freedom over their own. This conversation really is for everyone, whether you're a student, a parent, or a youth leader. My prayer is that this would encourage you to dig into hard questions when it comes to this topic, because when we do dig in, there's always freedom on the other side, thanks to Jesus. I hope that my conversation with Christy encourages you and spurs you on to ask the hard questions, seek answers about them for yourself. And if you are personally affected by pornography, which the majority of people, based on the statistics we're going to talk about, will be either indirectly or directly affected by porn, if that is you, my prayer is that her testimony serves as a source of hope to you. I hope that you hear the truth that you were made for more than the world is telling you, and that pornography is feeding you. I hope that you hear that you are worthy of the type of love that the Bible talks about and tells you to wait for, and that this counterfeit type of love that pornography has made us believe is real and desirable, it is none of what it claims to be. So I pray that this offers you freedom as we dive into this conversation. So here we go. Put your headphones in, get a cup of coffee, and let's see what Christy has to share with us today. All right, Christy, thank you for being here on the You Are Made for More podcast. I'm super pumped to have you. First, I kind of already introed you to our listeners, told them how I know you, who you are, but I always like to start with kind of just asking you to give us a Spark Notes version of who you are, what you love, and what people know about you from the moment they meet you. So go for it.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I live in El Paso, Texas, in the desert on the border of Mexico. So I live in a very different culture than the rest of the U.S. I mean, I think the U.S. is, of course, you know, a melting pot and full of different types of cultures. Mm. But our culture is predominantly Mexican. And so it's really cool It's a cool place to live. I've lived here for a pretty long time, for over 10 years. My dad was in the Army, so we moved around a whole ton. I'm 24. I got married almost 2 years ago to a guy named Mark. Love him. Yeah, he's definitely, you know, a pretty gorgeous boy. So I have no complaints. I am a youth director here at St. Clement's Church. I've also been doing that for pretty much 2 years officially, and kind of did like a 4-year long internship here at this church. And it's been awesome, and I love it. I love my job a whole ton.
It's St. Clement's now, but you also grew up there, right? That's where you went to youth group. Tell us a little bit about your testimony with following Jesus. How did you meet him? How did you actually end up following him and become a youth director today?
Yeah, of course. So, like I said, I grew up as a military brat, so I was constantly moving around for the first, like, 13 years of my life. So I didn't grow up in an Anglican church. I kind of did spiritually. I started attending St. Clement's when I was, like, 16 years old. But my relationship with the Lord, with Jesus, kind of started when I was, like, maybe 8th grade, kind of typical Jesus camp. I grew up as a Christian and was a Christian because my parents were Christians. My grandfather was a preacher. I went to the summer camp, and I remember this moment of during worship where people were around me and like their hands were raised and they were singing and crying. And it was just evident that they were encountering something. And in that moment, I had made the decision that I wanted that as well. And whatever they had, I wanted to. And then when I was 16, I came to St. Clement's, the youth group, and Stephen Tai was the youth director, and there were interns, and I came in and just instantly felt loved, which was really important for me in my growth of understanding my identity in Christ. And again, went on a different conference in December with that group after knowing them for 3 months, and had another moment when I was 16 and realized that I really needed to walk forward strongly in the Lord if I really wanted an active and growing relationship with him. And so since then, I have been attempting to do that, you know, ups and downs.
Awesome. So Chrissy, you're married, you're a youth director, and you live in such a fun city. I love what your life represents. I love our friendship, but most importantly, I love knowing the journey that God has taken you on to get you there. Pornography is a really taboo subject inside the church, and I love that we are trying to bring an awareness to what pornography does to your identity, to your relationships, and to the world around us. So I'm just going to share a little bit of background about pornography, and then I'm going to ask you about your testimony and talk a little bit about your own experience with it. So if you are listening to this and you've never heard of Harvest USA, I highly recommend you go online and check them out. They're a nonprofit who has the mission of bringing the truth and mercy of Jesus Christ by helping individuals and families affected by sexual struggles, and by providing resources that address biblical sexuality to individuals and churches. They release monthly publications for parents, and again, highly recommend checking them out. Their recommendation for when parents should start talking to students about pornography is between the ages of 8 to 12. And some parents, honestly, I say this to them and they will gasp at that age. But here's why they recommend talking to your kids when they are 8 to 12 years old. These statistics that I'm going to share with you really are very alarming if you've never heard them before, but they're also very telling of the state of the culture that we are in and how pornography is an epidemic. It is not just a problem, but it is running rampant in our society, and we need to start facing it head on. We can no longer just defensively wait for conversations to come up. We really have to attack this head on. So first, in 2015, CNN reported on a study released by Common Sense Media that found that teenagers actually spend on average of 9 hours a day on the internet. Now, that is important because the Huffington Post also reported that porn sites now receive more visitors each month than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined. Pornography is a $57 billion industry worldwide, a $14 billion industry in the U.S. Now, that's larger than all of the combined revenues of all professional football, basketball, and baseball franchises, and more than CBS, ABC, and NBC combined. When I started this work just about a year ago, the average age of exposure for a child to pornography was 11 years old. Today, in 2019, the average age of exposure has dropped to 8 years old. One out of three visitors to pornography sites are women. This is not just a men's issue. And lastly, pornography neurologically rewires your brain. Research has found that porn consistently alters the brain so that eventually you become unaroused by things that used to stimulate you. Fight the New Drug is a great organization that does work on these things that I also will link to in the show notes. They're a secular organization that raises awareness about the effect that pornography has on multiple facets of human functioning. So Chrissy, you sit here and you hear me read those statistics about pornography, but to you, they are very personal because you were one of them. The reason that I asked you to be on this podcast, first of all, we met like a year and a half ago, probably, at the March for Life. And one of the first conversations we had actually was about a tattoo that's on your arm, about Psalm 51. 10. Yeah. And I asked you what that was about, and you very openly shared with me, yeah, you know, I struggled with pornography when I was a teenager, and this is a reminder that God has renewed a right spirit within me. So I loved that you talked about that openly, because I think that that's something we're trying to do here at Abundant Life, is kind of create conversations. And I also invited you to be on here because I know that you live this in your daily life. You have conversations with students and parents and your friends about pornography and the damages that it can do. So I think that you're a great person to kind of dive in to this topic with, because not only have you experienced it, but it's also been really cool that you've gained freedom from it in your life and in your marriage and all of those things. So start from the beginning, and we know a little bit about who you were and growing up in church and when you met Jesus, but where did pornography kind of enter the picture for you? What did that look like?
Yeah. So funnily enough, that time period in which I wasn't going to youth group was when the stuff with pornography began. My addiction began. I was in high school, and I think I was like in biology class. I was for sure in biology class, which is a funny place for that to be.
Yeah.
The place where porn came in. Oh, my bad. So my class, it was like a free day, and my classmates, there was this really popular, like, anonymous chat site going around, and the kids, it wasn't blocked on the school, like, network, you know, like, YouTube was blocked, whatever, so all these websites are blocked on the school network, so you can't look at inappropriate things or do stuff you're not supposed to do while you're at school. This site wasn't. So it was a place where literally it was just you and then stranger talking. There was no photo. I mean, you could video chat if you wanted, but there wasn't any pictures. There wasn't profiles. It wasn't like, I don't know, like Tinder where you like swipe around and you get a little bio on the person. It was just, you're connected with a stranger, now go ahead and talk. So the kids in my school would just be lying about their age, you know, saying they're older than they were. And I remember there's like this moment where the like group of girls behind me or next to me started just laughing and like shut their computer really quickly. And they called me over and they like opened their computer screen and this guy had sent his penis like through the interwebs to them and started trying to do like cyber sex, sexting type stuff.
That's a tongue twister.
Yeah, it sure is. Say that 5 times fast. And I was confused because I don't think I'd ever really seen, you know, penis IRL before. I'd seen like drawings in like my anatomy book, health class, whatever, but never a photo of one IRL. So yeah. I was really confused because I was like, that looks weird. And it looks a little gross. Why are you guys enjoying this? But that also just like stored in the back of my head. So I went home. I had a computer and waited until my parents were asleep. I turned the lights off. I put a blanket over my head. I put my headphones in. Because I was scared they'd hear. And then I went on that site and just started talking to people and asking questions because I knew nothing about sex. I knew nothing about sexuality. I knew the, you know, very conservative Christian view of sex is bad and then you get married and then, you know, we don't talk about it. That's what I had known about sex at that age when I was 15 years old. So I began to have my sexual education be the internet, which was super scary, and is super scary now as a leader because I don't want my kids doing that because it's so damaging and so dangerous. Mm-hmm. So it started out as just pure curiosity, like, what's a penis? Like, what's an orgasm? What does it look like people having sex? And for a while, it was just purely looking it up and watching, like not doing anything else, like not masturbating, not sending. I never sent photos of myself, which, praise Jesus, am I right?
For real. Praise the Lord.
Yeah. But it was just like curiosity and unanswered questions and a mystery. I remember 3 months into it, I was like, oh, Christy, you're being so dumb. Like, this is so not what you're supposed to do. You're a Christian. Like, you're a good girl. Just delete everything. And so I went and I just deleted 3 months of computer history off of my phone, off of my computer, which looking back now, if I were a parent, I'd be like, why is there 3 months of computer history deleted off of your laptop?
Just wiped clean.
Like, it wasn't like individual sites or anything. It was just like the whole 3 months just gone.
Right.
So I tried to just stop, and I think it did for a few months, but it was still just stuck in my brain. And so I wanted to just know things and understand what was going on. It's like, what's an orgasm? What does that feel like? And trying to figure out, how do I get one, you know, and how do I purchase one or something? I don't know. How do you gain this? And so I looked at pornography and tried to figure out how to do it over the internet. And so it kind of, my relationship with porn ebbed and flowed for pretty much my whole high school 4 years of trying to figure out how to stop it being something that I used for like masturbation, it not being something I used, it being something I looked at when I was tired or sad or lonely. Mm-hmm. And it was, yeah, it was rough.
Hit on a lot of good points where you had certain things that triggered you, right? When you were tired, yeah, or sad or lonely, things like that. So would you say that you were addicted to pornography?
Yeah, I do. I would say that only because it was something that it was hard to quit. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was, mm-hmm, super difficult to end that cycle. It was for a while like a habitual thing, but it wasn't like, oh, I needed to do this right now. It was, I could not, and then would somehow, when I was in a moment where I was triggered, right, when I was sad or depressed or feeling lonely, or those were pretty much the three that, mm-hmm, got me. That would be my like rush of endorphins I needed in my brain to make me feel better, mm, for a moment. And then I would feel like crap afterwards because, yeah, I had so much shame and guilt, right? So, but I couldn't stop doing that because I had built those neurological pathways in my brain that when I feel sad, lonely, or tired, this is what makes me feel better.
So good. Yeah.
Ending that sucked.
Yeah, and yeah, I think you're right. Pornography does rewire your brain. I'm going to link to an organization in the show notes that, you know them. They're called Fight the New Drug, and they do a lot of work. They're great, and they really highlight how porn affects your brain, your relationships, and the world. So those three main things. But porn does neurologically rewire your brain. So, yeah, I think that breaking that cycle is really tough for some people, and there's going to be people listening to this that are where you were in that cycle of it really not being habitual, but it's a coping mechanism. You can't really get rid of it fully, no matter how hard you try. So, first of all, I want to hit on what – there's going to be three questions in one, but really – I think they all go together. First of all, what was the game changer for you? When did you really gain perspective on how you were going to fight this addiction? And what are some practical steps that someone else could take based off of your experience to break that addiction?
Mm-hmm. So the things that kind of helped me end that cycle were kind of steps in my life. So the first step was I went to a conference, and it was about like the Beatitudes in Matthew. And one of the Beatitudes, one of the first ones, is blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And I like walked in, I remember this vividly. I walked in, we had worship, and then that verse came up on the screen, and I instantly was like, oh my actual God.
Mm.
I was just instantly like, I am not pure in heart. How the heck am I supposed to see God?
Mm.
I have so much crap in my heart. How am I supposed to see God? And I kind of got stuck in like a shame like spiral because I was, you know, 16 years old, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And it was like when that stuff first started happening. So that was kind of the first step. In knowing that this is something that I needed to end, but it wouldn't come until I was like 18 or 19 years old when I started learning about human trafficking, that it became something that I knew needed to stop in my life for sure. And I worked really hard to get there, was learning about how you never know what you're watching whether it's quote unquote consensual or not, right?
Yep.
And porn fuels, you know, the product and demand system of human trafficking. And my heart like broke for human trafficking survivors and victims, people who've been taken from their homes and used and raped daily and multiple times a day and sold for sex. Like, I was like, how could that even be a thing? Like, it just was crazy to me. And when I realized that pornography is a part of why human trafficking exists, it like, it shattered me. I couldn't believe it. And I realized that I had been a part of fueling this need, this demand and product, this supply and demand cycle. And so it was realizing that I was like, yeah, no, like this, like, no, I just can't do this. Yeah. So that was kind of the last straw for me. And it took about a year till I was about 20. Until I was able to really get a handle and understanding on how to end that cycle in my mind and in my heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some practical things that I was able to do throughout that time period was talk to someone that I trust who's older than me. When I was in high school, there's this beautiful woman who I still love and goes to my church. Her name is Megan Fuel. I love Megan. And Megan would let me, throughout my whole high school 4 years, sit in her home every, like, Saturday morning, hold her little Asian cute baby named Perla and cry and be so honest about what I was doing and what was going through my mind. She was someone that I could say things that I hated were in my mind, like thoughts that I hated were even there. I could say them out loud to her without judgment or shame, right, or condemnation, because she was someone who loved me and prayed with me. She was someone when I started dating Mark in high school who kept me really accountable for my boundaries and what we were doing and what we weren't doing and, like, just making sure that we were safe and, you know, making sure that that sex was saved for us.
Yeah.
So that was really important. And then when I went into college, I have the mentor I have now, and her name is Courtney. And Courtney was really intentional about biblically mentoring me and, you know, is very wise. So she helped me keep me accountable as well. It's just someone who knows your full story and is able to ask you questions that friends won't ask you, but they still have, right? In high school, I had what was called a battle tracker, which you can get from a site called Fortify.
A great resource.
Yeah, they're so good. Fortify has this little black journal that's maybe 3 inches tall, and it goes weekly, and it's a setback versus victory kind of system. And so every week I would bring my battle tracker with me, and if I watched porn, I would like write it down. If I didn't, I'd put victory. And at the end of the week, it would be like number of setbacks, number of victories. And I would give it to Megan and she would look at it. So that was really important, was having someone in my life, having people in my life who asked me those hard questions that were uncomfortable to ask and uncomfortable to answer, but important for growth and healing. And the last thing that I did was actually recent. It was like a year and a half ago. I did this thing called Soul Care, and it's basically an inner healing ministry where you go through and you pray through your past and you, in the name of Jesus, cast things out and ask the Lord for healing from lies and truth from lies. And it was really important in retraining my brain and how to think. So that was kind of just awesome. It was it hasn't been this huge thing in my life, right? And it's not something I struggle with. But at that moment a year and a half ago, it was really important because it was starting to come back up again, right? Because pornography gets stuck in your brain, and it's not something that you just, you know, shall bama bing bing, instantly healed, forever healed. It's a continuous journey. And when you become a part of ministry and you become a leader of ministry, you know, the enemy hates that. And he wants leaders in ministry to fail and to be wrapped in sin and shame. So it had like started becoming something in the back of my mind again. And so my pastor set this up for me, and I was able to really pray through why this was an issue in my life. And it was awesome and super important in healing and retraining my brain.
So good. I love that you mentioned replacing lies with the truth, because I think I talk to so many students and adults who are struggling with this, and they just want to do it in their own willpower. You know, like they know they're feeling the shame, they're feeling the guilt, they hate themselves while they're watching porn. They hate themselves the minute the video or the picture, whatever they're looking at, stops, but they think they can do it by themselves. So that discipleship and accountability, those are two words that are really, really important. And practically having that tracker where you can be like, this is tangibly how many times I failed, and this is what we have to work with. Really important.
Yeah.
Next question I want to talk to you about is that guilt and shame that you have been able to replace with the truth. So you did feel guilt and shame. Talk to me a little bit about what that was like. How did that play into your relationship with Mark? And how does it play into your ministry and your marriage today?
Yeah. I've been a pretty shame, I like to say, was my constant companion growing up. I equated it to like it was a backpack I wore my whole life when I was talking about this story with my kids a few months ago. And every time I did something that I was ashamed of, the backpack would get heavier and bigger. And so when I would want to reach out and ask for help, the doorway to go and ask for help out of like, right. So it's like an imagery of me in this like deep, dark well. And I have got this huge, like hiking backpack on that's really heavy. And there's this door that's big enough for me and nothing else, right? And walking through that door meant that I needed to take my shame off so that I can talk to someone and be okay with talking with someone, be okay with being known by somebody else. And being known meant them knowing what I did, which was really scary for me.
Yeah.
So I would have to take that off and walk through that doorway. But with it on, I wouldn't fit. So I would tell my kids, you know, you've got to understand shame does nothing but hold us back. And shame is nothing but a lie. So shame and guilt is what started this whole addiction. When I was younger, I believed this lie. I would never be loved. And I wasn't lovable, and that I was just this average looking brown haired, freckle faced, chubby kid that isn't, you know, worth anything. And so this like twisted idea of watching somebody else love another person, because that was what I thought it was. That's why I thought pornography was someone loving each other. It's not, as we know. And for the listeners listening, it's not love. In case you didn't know. But that's what I thought. I was like, well, this is the only way that I'll ever receive this kind of love ever. So I would watch porn, and I would always watch it at nighttime or in the dark, which is a really good sign. If you only do something ever in the dark or at nighttime, it's probably not good. Because it's such a good shame to be in the light. Yeah, if you're ashamed to be in the light doing what you're doing, it's probably not good for you, because the enemy loves darkness. In the darkness, you can't see. So I would always do it in the light, and sorry, not in the light, in the darkness at nighttime. And I'd put my phone down or I'd shut my computer, and instantly I'd be like, oh my gosh, like, Christy, you are so dirty. You're so disgusting. You did this again. Like, come on, dude. Like, get it to frickin' together. Mm. Like, what is going on right now, my dude? And I would just, like, pull myself apart and be so angry with myself, but then feel so ashamed and not want to talk about it because, you know, you're a student leader or you're an intern or you're somehow in charge of something and you're supposed to not have the struggle anymore, or you're not supposed to have this weakness, and you do. And so that makes you awful and the worst human ever. So that's the lies that I heard. And then I never, ever saw women talking about pornography addictions, ever. So I was like, not only are you disgusting, Christy, you're the only girl who has ever struggled with this, ever, ever in your life.
What a lie that is, right? One in three women. But again, in the dark, the enemy makes you think that.
Yeah. So I was just like, wow, you're disgusting. And this is clearly just like a dude sin. And I can't believe this is something that you're struggling with. So it was hard. And when you believe those lies for such a long time and long enough, it becomes a part of who you are. And it's hard to break loose of those lies. And it's hard to believe truth even after you've heard it, which goes into retraining your mind to think. Right? It's like healing from pornography or any addiction is not just spiritual. It's not just practical. It's everything put together, you know, because it's more than just figuring out how to have better coping mechanisms. It's understanding coping mechanisms, following through and putting hard work into retraining your brain to think, but then also emotional and spiritual healing. Having someone that you're praying with and who's praying for you and who's keeping you accountable biblically and spiritually as well.
That's so good. So we are, again, I love that light and dark analogy. That's so good. Like, if you're doing something in the dark, you probably should recognize that it's not good for you and wants to get out of it. And you gave some really good practical things to get to take the first step to get out of it. And I love that, again, you label this struggle with pornography as a journey, you know, like it isn't something that you just wipe your hands with, you know, from when you understand that it's bad, right? Or that it's harming you, but it's something you constantly have to be in prayer about and fight, which is really important. So we are coming up on our time, but I do want to ask you one more question about just kind of thinking back to when you were 15, when you first were exposed to pornography, and then kind of the spiraling of things that led to this addiction. What would you say to a 15-year-old girl or boy today, if they are where you were at? What would you want them to hear?
I would have wanted to hear that I'm not alone. You know, you're not alone. You have redemption offered to you. You are not dirty. You are not disgusting and unlovable. You know, Jesus is here. And I know it seems impossible, but he wants to come and sit with you.
Mm.
And he wants to wrap you up in the biggest hug possible. And he wants to clean your heart. And those lies that you believed, little Christy, that you are unlovable and that you are such stupid lies. Because the truth is that you are so loved and that God chooses you. And continuously chooses you and wants you around and wants to be with you. So, like, it's just time to move forward, you know? It's time to put in hard work and it's time to move forward. It's time Amen. To stop living in lie and start living in truth.
So good. Yeah, I think that's a great note to end on, this You Are Made for More podcast, the idea that Jesus wants a relationship with you no matter what you've done or are doing, that there is redemption for everything, whether you think it's too dirty or you feel like your backpack isn't going to fit through the door to talk to someone about it. You know, Jesus wants to talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. And that's for everyone. You know, that's not just for guys. That's not just for girls. That's not just for girls yeah. that look like a certain way, you know, and coming back to that truth about who Jesus is and who he made you is what is going to change the game for a lot of people, I think. So thank you for sharing your story
yeah.
and for Thanks being for on having here. Me. Wow, that was so good. I know that that's going to hit home with a lot of you. So again, if you are one of those people who heard what Christy had to say and you are convicted that you need to do something about the sin in your life, I really encourage you to head on over to the show notes and check out the resources that she mentioned. Check out the Fortify tracker where you can hold yourself accountable. Talk to a parent or a youth leader about what it looks like to have accountability and discipleship in your life. Talk to the Lord about the shame and the guilt that you're experiencing and bring those things into the light, and you will find freedom from them. And we're praying for you here that you would at least start your journey to healing. Like Christy said, it's not always a wipe your hands of your sin and a clean cut dry type of thing. It's a journey, but we just wanted to start the conversation about this today. So we're so thankful for Christy and her vulnerability. And one of the quotes she shared, I just want to end on, but she said that her addiction with pornography began with a lie that she was not good enough or worthy of real love. And in the Bible, we are told that we are all worthy of that love, that God loved you enough to send his son to die for you. And in John 8, verse 32, we are told that when we know that truth, the truth will set us free. So hold on to that as you go through your week. Remember to rate this podcast, subscribe to it, give us a review. We appreciate it, and we love you guys. Thanks for tuning in.